in equal parts in FY 26-27. Line 161 is an appropriation for student support of $3,158,000 in each fiscal year. That also occurs in the 26-27 biennium per year. Line 162 is an appropriation for individual retirement account, plan contribution increases. The first year is $861,000. The second year is $872,000. The tails years are $883,000 in FY 26 and $894,000 in FY 27. Line 164 is the equipment and learning environments appropriation. It's a one-time appropriation of $13,500,000 in FY 24-25. It does not occur in the tails. Line 165 is for the development and expansion of industry sector programming at Minnesota State. That is $13.5 million in the first biennium, and that does not occur in the tails, making it one time. Line 166 is the Z Degree Textbook Program and Open Educational Resources Appropriation. It's a $2 million increase from base in FY 24-25, and then that increase does not occur in the tails. Line 167 is for UI reimbursement purposes, $809,000 in FY 24 as well as FY 25, and then that also carries into the tails in each year. Line 168 is an appropriation for menstrual products of $482,000 in FY 24, $282,000 in FY 25, and then the $282,000 occurs again both in FY 26 and FY 27. Line 169 is a transparent pathway for child development associate. It's $475,000 in FY 2024. Members may recall that this was originally appropriated to the Office of Higher Education, and the conference report reflects that it's been moved to Minnesota State in the report. And then, Chair and members, that wraps up the Minnesota State appropriation changes. If you look at line 190, you'll see in the column S, and above the base appropriation of $292 million, $292,000,906 in FY 24-25, and $168,275,000 in FY 26-27. And then, Chair and members, moving to the University of Minnesota, the change items are not on page 7, but they're begin on page number 8. And so those begin on line 223. Those begin on line 209 on page 7. So line 209 on page 7 is the appropriation for an increase for core mission support of $100 million in FY 24-25 and then $100 million in 26-27. Line 211 is an appropriation for system-wide safety and security. It is $10 million in FY 24-25. And $2 million in FY 26-27. Line 213 is an appropriation for UI reimbursement of $732,000 in FY 24-25, and again, $732,000 in 26 and 27 biennium. Line 214 is an appropriation for the University of Minnesota and CentraCare Partnership of $10 million in FY 2024. And that only occurs one time in that fiscal year. Line 215 is an appropriation for menstrual products of $374,000 in the first year, $110,000 in the second year, and then $110,000 in FY 26 and 27. Flipping over, Chair and members, to page number 8 is on one more change item. You'll see it on line 230. It's a change to the system special, specifically to NRRI. That's an increase to the system special of $4 million, specifically for the NRRI purpose. So a $4 million change in FY 24-25. And then that's a one-time change that reverts back to base in FY 26-27. Line 238 in column S shows that $125,216,000 has been appropriated in the conference report above base for the 24-25 biennium, and then $102,952,000 above base in the FY 26-27 biennium. And then finally, Chair and members, there is one change item for the Mayo Foundation. It can be found on line 251. This is an increase to the Mayo Family Medicine and Residency Program. It's $896,000 in FY24-25, and that increase carries into the tails for $896,000 above base in FY26-27. That's the only change for Mayo, so that 896 represents the total changes for the Mayo Foundation above base. And then chair and members, line 263. In column S and column U just shows that the conference report is within the $650 million target and $450 million allocation above base in both biennia. And just as a note, the final page on page 10 is just an accounting of a tracking of the various transfers that occur throughout the conference report as prepared to various House and Senate positions. And Mr. Chair, that wraps up the spreadsheet walkthrough.
Thank you so much for the walkthrough. Next, we'll go through the policy provisions of the bill. Ms. White, would you like to begin for that walkthrough?
Actually, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hopkins is going to begin, and then awesome. I will take it after.
Thanks, sorry, Mr. Hopkins.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll be walking through Article 2 of the Conference Committee report. Article 2 begins on page 30 of the report that you have. Section 1, American Indian Scholars. This provision was in both the House and Senate bills. This establishes a new statutory program to provide tuition and fee-free undergraduate education to American Indian students at public post-secondary institutions. On page 31 of the report, access to menstrual products, this was a Senate provision. It requires MnState and requests the University of Minnesota to provide students free access to menstrual products. Also on page 31, a Senate provision regarding the Hunger Free Campus designation. This makes the Office of Higher Education Student Advisory Council responsible for the application and review process. On page 32, also regarding the Hunger Free Campus designation, this expands the competitive grant program to nonprofit private post-secondary institutions. But provides that no more than 20% of grants may be awarded to those private nonprofit institutions. It also increases maximum grant award amounts. On page 33 of the report, this is the Inclusive Higher Education Technical Assistance Center. It was in both bills. So this requires the establishment of the Technical Assistance Center, which will increase higher education access for students with intellectual disabilities. On page 36 of the report, this is the second part of the Inclusive Higher Education proposal. It was in both bills. This is the grant program, the Inclusive Higher Education Grant Program. This requires OHI, in collaboration with the Technical Assistance Center, to create a competitive grant program for post-secondary institutions to create new or expand existing programs for students with intellectual disabilities. And this includes the Senate provision that makes private nonprofit post-secondary institutions eligible for grants. On page 39, section 7, regarding the Hunger Free Campus designation, this adds oversight of the Hunger Free Campus designation application and review process to the list of responsibilities for the Office of Higher Education Student Advisory Council. On page 40 of the report, this was in both bills regarding the state grant program, assigned family responsibility. This amends the definition of the assigned family responsibility to conform to changes in federal student aid calculations. It also allows OHI to adjust the AFR to reflect part-time enrollment. On page 40, state financial aid programs, the definition of student. This was in both bills. It amends the definition of student for purposes of state financial aid programs to include any enrollment of one credit per term or more. Page 41, state grant program cost of attendance. This was in both bills. This increases the living and miscellaneous expense allowance from 109% to 115% of the federal poverty guidelines for a one-person household in Minnesota for 9 months. On page 41, also affecting the state grant program awards, This was in both bills. This amends the cap on state grant awards from eight full-time semesters to 180 total credits. On page 42 of the report, this was in both bills, affecting the state grant program. This extends the deadline for state grant applications. On page 42, section 13, this is a Senate provision. It's connected to the North Star Promise program. This expands OHE's existing reporting requirements for the state grant program to include spending projections for that new North Star Promise program. On page 42 still of the report, this was in both bills. This affects the Fostering Independence Grant Program. This is a technical change to conform to federal changes in student aid calculations. Section 15, on page 43 of the report, in both bills, this is another technical conforming change. Page 44 of the report, the Student Parent Support Initiative. This was in both bills. This establishes a new statutory program to provide grants to post-secondary institutions and other applicants to support expectant parents and parents of young children. Turning to page 46 of the report, this affects the Indian Scholarship Program. This was in both bills. It makes technical adjustments to conform to changes in federal student aid calculations. On page 47, both bills, this is another technical conforming change. And Mr. Chair, I will now pass it to Ms. White for the remainder of Article 2.
Thank you. Ms. White.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll begin with section 19 on page 47. The Minnesota Commitment to Higher Education Act has been changed to the North Star Promise Program. This is a tuition-free program. The eligibility criteria is in Subdivision 2. This program provides scholarship for 100% of the actual tuition and fees after grants and other scholarships are deducted. In addition, if funds remain for 3 academic years, grants up to 50% of the amount of the Pell Grant a student would receive after gift aid is deducted must be awarded to the eligible students, and the commissioner has the authority to adjust this grant amount based on the availability of funds. Moving on to section 20, which is on page 50. This section was in both the House and Senate. It was similar, it was not identical. The conference committee adopted the Senate language, and it amends the teacher shortage loan repayment program by prioritizing funds for teachers who belong to a racial or ethnic group unrepresented in the Minnesota workforce, and to the extent funds are available. Eligibility extends to teachers who teach in a rural district or a license shortage area. Section 21 is on page 51. This is a House-only provision and modifies the dual training competency grants by adding the cost of training for recommended books and materials in addition to required books and materials. Section 22 is on page 51. The provisions in the House and Senate bills were identical. Adds that when determining dual training competency grants, the commissioner must consider certain aspects of the, must consider the employer's demonstrated ability to recruit, train, and retain employees who are employees of color, American Indian employees, and employees with disabilities. Section 23 was also an identical provision, requires a large employer in dual training to pay for at least 25% of the cost of training. Section 24, which is on page 52, is identical in both bills, authorizes the office to allow dual training competency grantees to use up to 10% of the grant for costs of training. Section 25 on page 52 is the direct admissions program. These provisions were similar in the House and Senate. However, the Senate included nonprofit Minnesota colleges and universities, and the conference committee adopted the Senate language. Section 26 is a House-only provision. It's on page 53, and it strikes a reference to a section of law that's repealed in Section 35. Section 27 was identical in both bills, amends a workforce development scholarship program by expanding the programs of study to include construction, education, and public safety. Section 28 on page 54 was identical in both the House and Senate, amends a dual training competency training to include transportation and child care. Section 29 on page 54 is a House-only provision. It makes the University of Minnesota, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and tribal colleges eligible to receive unemployment insurance aid from the state. Section 30 is on page 55. This was similar in the House and Senate. The conference committee adopted the House language, increases the employer contribution rate for Minnesota State Higher Education Individual Retirement Account Plan to 8.75% of salary. Section 31 is a House-only provision establishing the paramedic scholarship program. Section 32 on page 56 is a House-only provision related to the unemployment insurance aid reports. Section 33 is a Senate-only provision establishing a post-secondary student basic needs working group, requires a report, and the conference committee adopted a sunset of the working group, which is on September 1st of 2026. Section 34 on page 57 is a Senate-only provision requiring a report on Minnesota State Colleges and Universities course placement practices. Section 35 on page 58 is a House-only provision repealing the Minnesota State Trustee Candidate Advisory Council, which has not met since 2012.
Thank you so much, Ms. White and Mr. Savory, for walking through that. On behalf of the committee members, I want to say thank you to all the nonpartisan staff and the revisor's office for working tirelessly over the weekend. None of this would be possible without your work, and we value each and every one of you, and I just wanted to say thank you so much. And with that, is there any comments or from the members? Representative O'Neill.
First, can we turn the volume up in here? I could barely hear Ms. White, and I can't really hear you in the room. Just wondering if we turn the volume up of if the pages could do that. They can't. Okay, well, we can do that in the House, so I guess that's a Senate-only provision.
I'll ask members to speak into the microphone. Maybe that'll help with the sound.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first, you know, I've said this many, many times now on the floor, in committee, and other places. I'm incredibly disappointed that all of the only thing we had publicly was the initial walkthrough, the side-by-sides, and a little bit of public testimony, but we didn't have even public testimony on the largest provision that is in this bill that was a Senate-only provision. I wasn't in the room to discuss it. We haven't had any open meetings about it, and so I would like to raise that. So you have the Senate-only provision of free college for those that have an adjusted household income of $80,000 or less. Now, even in, Chair, your bill, it was much higher than that. And so we are struggling to try to find any sort of fiscal note or explanation more than just the words on the paper as to how many students that might entail, any kind of projections. This just seems really rushed through. We didn't have even a single hearing in the House about those provisions, about free college for all. I know that we have discussed that in some measure throughout some time, you know, a few years here at the legislature, but this is a very specific proposal that we've not heard before, and I'm wondering if you're planning on having maybe even just OHE, if they've done any studies about like how far this would go and how you arrived at $117 million. There's got to be a reason. It's much smaller than what you'd had in your underlying bill. So that would be my first question, if we could have some sort of, if OHI has any further information that they could provide specifically to this provision, because again, we've not heard it at all in the House.
Thank you so much. Oh, thank you, Representative O'Neill. And before OHI comes up, you can come up. Thank you so much. None of the stuff in this bill has been hidden. Everything in here has had a hearing, either in House or Senate or both. We've heard public testimony from students and members also saying that they're advocating for the pieces that they like, including the tuition-free piece. The tuition-free college piece, I believe, will impact somewhere between 33,000 and 34,000 students. But when you combine that with the state grant changes that we're making, it'll be closer to 67,000 students. But I'll let OHI also expand more on that as well. So please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nicole Whalen, and I am the State Grant Research Manager at the Office of Higher Education.
Hey, Nicole, do you mind speaking a little bit more quickly into the mic? Thank you.
Is that better?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, so my name is Nicole Whalen, and I am the State Grant Research Manager at the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. So yes, I have, to Representative O'Neill's question, I have run some numbers on this program. I know that a fiscal note was provided, I believe, just prior to the Senate Finance Committee meeting, and I'm not sure if it hasn't been updated since then. But my most recent projections, and this includes kind of everything in the bill, so this includes the tuition freeze at Minnesota State, it includes state grant changes as well. My estimates is that this program, the last dollar piece of this program would serve around 15,000 students a year on average, with an average grant of around $3,100. Now, there is the kind of secondary piece to this program, which is the Pell Match grant, because that is something that could be allowed to fluctuate. You know, I'm happy to provide some kind of rough estimates on that, but I'm not sure what kind of how deep you want me to go into that. So let me know.
You can continue.
Okay. So based on my rough estimates of the appropriations that have been included in the bill and spending for the North Star Promise program, I estimate that most likely we will be able to provide a 25% Pell match for fiscal year 2025 and then for the next biennium as well. That inclusion would increase the number of students served to around 20,000 students with a similar average grant size.
Thank you. Any additional questions or comments? Oh, Representative O'Neill, you had another question? Or anyone
yes.
else? Representative
yes,
O'Neill.
Thank you. The testifier had said that she had calculated in also we're doing a tuition freeze for Mint State, and I'm just wondering if she could elaborate on that and how that would affect students or how many students or what kind of dollar amount we think.
Ms. Whalen.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Yes, so because this program is a last dollar tuition grant, it interacts in every way with the state grant changes as well as what tuition and fees might be at the Minnesota state systems and at the University of Minnesota as well. However, they were not included in the tuition freeze. To kind of sum it up, I would say that a tuition freeze lowers total costs for this program by about $2 million per year. And that also would lower the average grant size, but only because students are asked to pay less in tuition and fees. And so a similar thing is happening then on the state grant side of the equation, where students are getting a little bit more in state grant with the LME increase. Therefore, that does reduce the cost of the program overall somewhat.
Ms. O'Neill, or Representative O'Neill, sorry.
That's all right. I'll call you Mr. Fate. So that's very helpful. I appreciate that. I'm wondering if we have Minn State and the University of Minnesota here, if they could speak to the funding levels that are in this bill and how that would affect them. And I realize that Minn State doesn't have a whole lot of place to go because we did freeze their tuition. So I'm actually a little more interested in the University of Minnesota and how this dollar amount would affect them, because they came in to into committee in the House saying that if we didn't give them XYZ amount of money, I can't remember what it was, that they were going to be raising tuition significantly. So I'd like to hear what they have to say now, if that would be, if they are here,
sure.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mackey and Mr. Friends, are you available?
Sure.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Fate and Chair Pulaski. Myron Franz, Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I want to make sure I understand your question exactly, Representative.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senior Vice President Franz. Is that right? Okay,
right.
I got
Thank
it.
You.
It's a long title. My question was, hopefully you've had an opportunity to look at the conference committee report. I know it came out very late last night, and you know, I even had media calling me near 9 p.m. last night asking me about it, and I hadn't had a chance to even review it because I wasn't a part of the process to put it together. But my question to you is, if you've reviewed it, and when you had come in front of the higher ed committee in the House, you said specifically if you didn't get certain components of your ask that there would be a tuition increase. Now that you looked at what the dollar amounts are, is there going to be a tuition increase, and if so, how much would be your estimation?
Mr. Friends.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually what we originally proposed was a funding proposal to take care of our core mission, and that was a $45 million a year request. And that request was based upon the university fulfilling the other half of that, or the other $45 million. It was our estimate that about $90 million a year would cover the cost of providing the kind of campus student services, employee compensation, and infrastructure costs. It would cost about $90 million a year with the increase of inflation. So the university proposed that we would try to cover $45 million of that cost, and we asked the state for the other $45 million. And in that proposal, we said that the if we were able to get that kind of funding, $45 million a year in tuition costs, that we would be able to keep we would be able to recommend to the Board of Regents that the tuition increase would be no more than 3.5%. That was based upon the $45 million full funding at that point. So I think the key that I would say, based on the new funding levels that I've seen in the bill, I've only had a little bit of time to look it over, I would suggest that we're still in that same area that where we were. We got a little bit more than the $45 million per year, and that would help us be able to maintain the recommendation to keep tuition costs at or below 3.5%, but that's we haven't been able to really study it intensely at this point, but that would be a recommendation we would make to the Board of Regents in June.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senior Vice President Franz. I'm wondering if maybe the nonpartisan fiscal could just, I'm just trying to flip through here quick, but the nonpartisan fiscal could say what the top dollar amount was for the University of Minnesota so we could just kind of finish that loop here.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Franz, I'm just going to skip the title for a second. You've got 3.5%. Now, that's the main campus. Is that 3.5% for Morris, for Crookston, and Duluth, or are they going to be at what you had recommended us at 1%? Can you tell us what those campuses would be?
Right, Mr. Chair, the original proposal
Mr. Franz.
That we discussed with the committee would keep the other regional campuses, system campuses, at 1% and the Twin Cities campus at 3.5% under that original proposal.
Chair Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Franz, so under this bill, what would the tuition increases be on the other campuses?
Mr. Franz.
Mr. Chair, Once again, we'll be recommending to the board, but I think our view of the current bill would be that we would continue to recommend no more than 1% at the other campuses and no more than 3.5% at the Twin Cities campus.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Franz, thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from members? Representative O'Neill.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'm just wondering if, just so that we have kind of a closed loop of conversation too, if nonpartisan fiscal could just read those changes so that Senior Vice President Franz can hear that. And then, again, because this came out very late last night and it's very hard for us all to pour through it as quickly as possible. And so it's, I don't besmirch him at one bit for not knowing exactly what's in here because it was very late last night when
Mr.
it
Savory.
Emerged.
Chair and members, the total change for the University of Minnesota is $125,216,000 in the first biennium and then $102,952,000 in the second biennium, which would be in total appropriation within the bill, including the healthcare access fund would be $1,508,042,000 in FY24-25. And then $1,485,778,000 in FY26-27 as an all funds total appropriation.
Thank you, Mr. Savory. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. That's helpful. That I had some of these numbers here in front of me. I appreciate that. That's super helpful. I'm just wondering if I could go back to Senior Vice President Franz, if now that you heard it fresh again, those numbers, how far off of what you had asked? And would that reconfirm that there would be a suggestion or you would move forward from the administration to the region board to do a 3.5% tuition increase at the Twin Cities campus and a 1.5? You said at Morris, and I'm not sure if you meant more than just Morris, but if you could just clarify that.
Mr. Franz.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative, I think the key that I would say is that based upon the numbers in the current in the current conference committee report, that it's really close to the original estimate of $45 million. So my assumption would be that we'd be able to maintain a recommendation to the board of 3.5% or less for the Twin Cities campus and the Rochester campus, typically, and then 1% for all the other campuses at Crookston, Morris, and at Duluth.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so it's a... The recommendation will be 3.5% tuition increase to the Twin Cities campus and Rochester campus, 1.5% to all the other campuses. And let me just ask one other quick thing, because over the weekend there was quite a bit of upheaval in Dinkytown and the Marcy Holmes neighborhood. I believe tonight that there's a parent and stakeholder meeting or interested parties meeting concerned about the violence, and I think it's a $10 million. I'm trying to remember all these numbers. $10 million specific for safety. And I know that, like, when we talked about this last biennium, there was an ask of $100 million. So that's one-tenth of what the original ask was last biennium in any case. What will be the net effect of a $10 million? And I think it's $2 million. Maybe, is it that in the tails? Yes, they're saying yes to that too. So 10 and 2, and what will be the net effect of what you're able to do at the University of Minnesota campus, and specifically in regards to safety? And I know there was a huge concern over the weekend regarding that. And again, there's a stakeholder meeting tonight.
Mr. Franz.
Mr. Chair, well, first of all, let me go back to the tuition thing. We would be recommending a 1% increase for the system campuses, not 1.5%. Secondly, with respect to the events over this last weekend, we're certainly concerned about that. And one of the things that we've been working on with the Minneapolis Police Department, the Hennepin County Sheriff's Department, the Minnesota State Troopers, light rail, Metro Transit Authority. We've been working with all of those jurisdictions to make sure that we're coordinating efforts, not only over this last weekend, but for this next week and going forward, to make sure that we provide the kind of coverage that we think is necessary to confront some of these challenging issues in the Dinkytown area. So there's a lot of effort being focused on that area again, It's unfortunate and it's really concerning that these kinds of activities are happening. We want to make sure that we provide as much coverage as is possible. Chief O'Hara of the Minneapolis Police Department has been leading that effort. We're coordinating with them. As you know, it's a Minneapolis jurisdiction, but the University of Minnesota Police Department is supporting that in many, many ways and with a lot of effort. With respect to the investment, the reason that we asked last year for $100 million was more of a one-time ask to upgrade and enhance the overall security infrastructure and add new personnel. The reason we changed to a $10 million per year ask was to have a change in the recurring base to make sure we have that on an ongoing basis. So to the extent we are able to receive funds, and we appreciate the dedication of funds in this bill to public safety, that will have an immediate effect on our ability to invest in the infrastructure, whether that's lighting, cameras, security access to the campus itself, because if we can maintain a higher security and access control over the campus, that frees our licensed police officers, gives them more time to be available for policing activities and not just on security areas. We've also been hiring more security personnel. Those are folks who are not licensed police officers and don't carry a weapon, but provide, again, more security control and access on the campus, allowing our officers to engage in activities on and off campus. So the allocation of public funds is an extremely important part of this bill, and I want to thank the chairs for including that, because I think this is a really important time for us to make sure that we provide these kind of assets and these opportunities to oversee public safety in and around campus, and we appreciate that very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Pulaski, too.
Thank you, Mr. Franz. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's all I had for the University of Minnesota. Thank you so much, Senior Vice President Meyer and Franz. And I'm wondering if the Minn State folks would come up and same question. It's a little harder for them because it's a tuition freeze, Mr. Chair, so they don't have a lot of wiggle room, so to speak, and there's not going to be the ability to raise student fees or anything because that's also in this. But if they could just speak to the net effect of the conference committee report on their institution. And I know that there was concern. I've heard it from multiple faculty, staff, and others in the Minn State system, their concern about contraction, about potentially some layoffs and so on. So if you could just speak to that with the net effect of this bill.
Mr. Mackey, please introduce yourself for the record and respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Fattay. Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Facilities, Minnesota State. Representative O'Neill, related to this bill, Minnesota State's biennial budget request requested our board a tuition freeze over the 23-24 and 24-25 academic years, and to fully fund a tuition freeze in lieu of up to a 3.5% increase. The cost was $75 million over the biennium, and we're grateful for that $75 million is included in this bill. We also, part of our request was $125 million over the biennium for stabilization to support, primarily to support campus operations. We're very grateful that $125 million is included in this bill for the biennium. In addition, as we went throughout session and testified to the House and provided college and university specific data related to situations at each of our institutions related to enrollment and their operating budgets, the $50 million that's in the bill for one-time campus support for fiscal year 24 will provide bridge financing or additional flexibility for some of our universities and colleges that are going through some significant budget reductions. And they will still need to go through the significant budget reductions, primarily due to long-term enrollment declines. But this one-time funding does allow more flexibility in options to consider in doing it over a longer time period, doing it through programs such as early retirement incentives and such. So We're very pleased based on what our biennial budget request and what's in this bill related to those two categories. Student support, which is a tuition freeze, was the majority of it, and our Minnesota State stabilization portion.
Thank you, Mr. Mackey. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Mackey. I appreciate that. So the $50 million is, you see it as kind of like a ramp to get to where you, because we know we've had major reductions in student enrollment over the past decade. We've talked about that multiple times in the higher ed committee in the House. And so you see that as sort of a glide path off so you can do early retirements and a few other things to try to bring contraction to the system as a whole to kind of right-size it for how many students are coming or will potentially be coming. Let me ask you this, too, because at least we didn't talk about this on the House side, which is the free tuition, and it looks like it's going to be, or free college, I should say, about 15,000 students, but they can go to either your system, they can go to the U, or they can go to a tribal college. So it's not exclusively for the University of Minnesota system. So have you had any thoughts, conversation internally about what that will do as far as stabilization of the Minn State system? And it's not a ton of students, but it's some students.
Mr. Mackey.
Chair Fattah, Representative O'Neill, you know, related to the one-time campus support funding, the $50 million, that support does help some of our institutions more than others. And in the bill, it talks about institutions that has seen significant enrollment declines between this fiscal year and fiscal year 2019. And then it's based on the tuition rate that each of those institutions assess students. So if we look at how we're going to allocate or how that $50 million is going to be allocated, it's much different than how we allocate other state resources. The goal of it is to help the campuses that are most in need due to those enrollment declines the last 5 years. It is the gap or the enrollment decline in the lost revenue was larger than the $50 million, but the $50 million covers a significant portion of what that loss was during that time period. Related to the North Star program, free college, we do see that as being a significant benefit to Minnesota State. Our Board of Trustees has had that in past biennial budget requests. We did not this session, but we're fully supportive of being able to move forward that and supporting our stakeholders that did support that. And I don't have specific data, but just based on the proportion of students in Minnesota that join Minnesota State, either at our two-year colleges and our universities, we expect that program will help us with enrollment.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Mackey. Appreciate that. I know, again, these are right hot off the press. It's a smaller number of students than it was in the state, or excuse me, in the Senate version. And so I'm sure you haven't had a whole lot of time to kind of digest it. None of us really have. So I'm just wondering if you've had those conversations. I really appreciate that answer. And I would note, too, that there is a floor of what one of your campuses would get. I think it was 300,000, I think it was the floor, which is helpful for some place like Pine Tech, you know, that did such a good job and had a 47% increase in enrollment for the last decade. At least they get something. You know, they're doing the right thing, and their campus is overflowing and actually expanding and adding a couple of buildings. So that's exciting. Specifically, I know the St. Cloud campuses have not done well, and I'm sure this will help them. Do you have any other plans in addition to this $50 million being utilized in areas like St. Cloud that is just, I think they had like a 41% decrease in student enrollment in the last decade or so, somewhere around that number. I can't remember exactly. But do you have, in addition to this $50 million, do you have any other plans to try to bring enrollment up? That's something we've talked about a lot in the House Higher Ed Committee. If you could speak to that and how this conference committee report either helps or could do better in some things.
Mr. Mackey.
Chair Fateh, Representative O'Neill. Some of the other investments that are in this bill will assist with overall enrollment management in our system. There's funding in here for student support, which will help us to be able to provide more basic needs and mental health support across our system. The funding for workforce will also spur some additional investments of programs where there's demand for more graduates, and so institutions will have the ability to add capacity to those programs. Each of our colleges and universities, and I believe we testified this, or the chancellor did early in the session, have strategic enrollment management plans that focus on different measures at their colleges and universities to improve student success, not only improve recruitment of students, but also to improve persistence and completion. So we have many strategies happening, and some of the investments in this bill will help us gain momentum in those areas by having, we haven't seen this level of operation O&M funding ever. So that funding by itself will help advance some of those strategic goals.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. So like the dual training grants was increased to $8 million and then a little bit smaller in the next year. But I've got to think that that has to help the MnState system as well, because that's primarily where they go for, not exclusively, but primarily where they go for the technical training. And so, and back to President Mulford, I actually worked with him on that dual training program back in 2015. So he was at the forefront of that, way back then. But I hope that that really does help. And there's a few other things that, a few other scholarship programs on here that will probably help as well. I just wanted to hear your take on that, and I appreciate all of those answers. And I don't have any more questions for the MnState system, but maybe other members do if they've read the conference committee report.
Any questions from members? Thank you, Mr. Mackey. Before we hear final comments from chairs, Commissioner Olson, would you like to have some remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dennis Olson, proud to serve as the Commissioner of the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Little bit of a surprise, Mr. Chair, members. I didn't prepare any comments, but I think it's pretty clear here, not only over the course of the conference process, but the session overall. This is an incredibly historic opportunity here that we have, and I'm excited to be able to see it through on behalf of the Office of Higher Education, all of our incredible staff that now have the opportunity to get to work improving current programs that we have and implementing plenty of exciting new programs. So Chair Fateh and Chair Pulowski, thank you for your partnership throughout the entire session and for really digging in and hearing and understanding the needs of our institutions, the needs of our students, and of course, a bill that certainly benefits Minnesota as a whole for generations to come. So that's all I have at this time. Just much appreciation. Mr. Chair, that'll conclude.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Olson.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure serving with you this year. Thank you. Chair Pulowski, would you like to have any closing remarks?
Senator Fateh, thank you. This is the third time I've had the opportunity to chair a higher education conference committee. I did it in 1997-98, and the theme then was mandate reduction, and the governor was Arne Carlson. In 2013-2014, the theme then was, for the first time and only time until this bill, was trying to freeze tuition, which we did in 2013-2014, and the governor was Governor Dayton. This time we're doing something even beyond those two bills. This is a historic investment, and it's a historic investment based on the budgets that were studied by both chambers over the course of this legislative session. We went back 10 years in looking at declining enrollment. We went back and took a look at campus by campus budgets and deficits. We changed how both systems presented their budgets to us, and for the better, and I hope for the future. We desperately need a skilled workforce. This bill is going to give the opportunity to those individuals that want to acquire a skill to get it, to get into that workforce, and address the needs of Minnesota and this country. I can't thank everybody here enough, and I want to thank Senator Fateh. I've told this before, but I'll tell it again. When he introduced himself to me, he said he was a socialist. And I said, and I'm a retired social studies teacher. So we've had that in common during the course of this whole session. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Pulaski. It was an honor serving with you this year. Learning from you, working with you, I greatly appreciated everything that you have contributed to this bill. And it wouldn't be possible without you, so thank you. I want to say first thank you to all the students that helped shape this bill to make it what it is today. We've heard countless testimony and stories from them about the struggles that they're facing and what we can do to help benefit them. And this is largely a student-run bill that they had a lot of their input into this. They advocated a lot. They showed up at the Capitol. They helped organize rallies. They put a lot of work to this. So to RJ, Kylie, Marwa, Jean, Sia, John, Karina, Melody, Travis, Olivia, and so many others, I want to say thank you and congratulations, because this wouldn't be possible without any of you. I want to say thank you to the partners that helped, from Lead MN to IFO, folks like John, Jenna, Mike. I appreciate your partnership in this and the work that you also put into making this a reality. I want to say thank you to the nonpartisan staff, the revisor's office, and our staff for the long hours they put into this to help shape this bill, make it what it is today. And I also want to thank OHI for your contributions, for helping me, educating me when I needed it, and always being available when I had questions, and to ensure that our Office of Higher Education is running smoothly. So for Ms. Oliver, for Ms. Whalen, Commissioner Olson, I want to say thank you all so much for everything. This bill is historic and is something that I'm incredibly proud of. This is my first year serving as the Chair of Higher Education, and I had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun putting this together and meeting all of you, and I look forward to continuing and building off of this success. And finally, I'd like to note that a majority of the conferees from both the House and the Senate have signed the conference committee report, and that it has been adopted. And with that, there is no further business, and we are now adjourned. So thank you.